So he will be telling us about accessing XAMPP from Linux. So I'm kind of curious if SMB client is still the way to go, or if that's state of the art.
Okay, so volume okay on the, you guys in the back in here, good. So it's another exciting year for Samba. I'm looking forward to Tom Talpe's talk and later in the day on the wonderful Windows things, and it was exciting to hear all the CTDB things, and I think you know, we're all waiting to hear about Jeremy Allison and his follow-up on the presentation he did on Vault, at Vault on POSIX extensions that'll help SMB client as well as the Linux SIFS client. So I'd like to talk today about something that seems counterintuitive sometimes, right? Accessing Samba, accessing Linux from Linux, right? Because we think of NFS all the time. And I work with the NFS experts at Primary Data. We have Tron, the NFS maintainer, and the IETF chairman, Tom. We have a very interesting group of people. And NFS is making progress, right? NFS has flex files. We do mirroring from the client. They have some neat features. I don't think they have all the clustering features we do, and I like our RDMA support better. And there's a lot of protocol features, though, that are really interesting for SMB, even in this world where, you know, NFS 4.2 exists. So let's talk about accessing Samba from Linux, and also talk about some of the cool things that we added to Linux to make, you know, interoperability with Macs and interoperability with Windows. You know, one thing I should probably mention to you is that the Linux client has strange fans. You guys, like, you don't have people walk up to you at conferences and talk about the backup apps they do or movie editing, or, you know, you buy some monitors and the guy talks about how he gets stuff off his Xbox with the Linux client, right? I mean, you get these strange, oh, you maintain Linux, you know, I use that to get these files off my NAT. You know, okay. So it's interesting. So let's back up a little bit. Linux is amazing, right? File System Summit a few weeks ago, it's always fun to talk. You know, I think you guys heard some talks about Gluster and Ceph and some of the wonderful things going on. You know, we had 4,400 change sets go into the file system alone. Now realize the vast majority of Linux changes go in for some bizarre drivers, right? Some weird device or some obscure Android thing or some obscure, you know, you get crazy people who do Raspberry Pi, you know? So think about these strange devices, right? So that dominates. But still, this is what? Over 5% of the change in the kernel. This is a huge activity, 4,000 changes. These are sets of changes, right? Not just one change. So we also have this wonderful tool set. We've kind of settled as a group of file system developers on XFS test as the bucket to throw all file system tests in. And we have user space tools and such. So what's the most active? You know, would you guys have won the quiz if I asked you what the most active file system is? I don't know. I just took the data for the last 13 months, right? ButterFS won. So, surprise. I think a lot of people, you know, think EXT4 or whatever. It's interesting. So let's also think about Samba, selfishly, right? A lot of people here like care about Samba. Yeah, NFS kernel has some interesting features. I'm sure for those of you like Ganesha has some interesting features. But last year we had a lot of NFS activity. Jeff Layton at our company did quite a few, probably that many himself. This year, maybe not so much. Now, how many file server changes do you think Jeremy alone did? How many file server changes do you think Stefan did just for Badlock? And then compare with the NFS server. Samba rocks. Samba's amazing. We have a lot of work. We do a lot of work. Now, kernel client. We've gone from 4.1 to 4.6 RC7. Hopefully next week we'll have the charred weasel. I don't know if you guys can find a better picture than that for a charred weasel, but that's the best I could do. I don't pick these names. Okay, so what's the high-level view? We had a little less activity last year. Part of that's some of the grad students rolled off, and you know, hopefully we'll see some of that activity bumping up a little bit this year. But okay, what's the really high-level view? SMB3 support is okay. Large file I/O is really good. I think last year I gave some examples of what you'd see for large file I/O. And by the way, the NFS guys didn't totally ignore this, and they did a few bug fixes, so NFS is getting closer. But our large file IO is actually pretty good. If what you care about is copying from Linux to Linux, Mount SIFS isn't bad. Now, on the other hand, where's Volker? Where, if you talk to Volker, he's going to correctly show you that a couple years ago, he did some really good stuff for parallelizing the user space, sort of FTP-like SMB client. So that can get even better, especially if we're dealing with experimental multi-channel support. So where's the problem? Well, one of the problems is we're chatty in SMB3. We open query close a lot. Open query close too much. And Samba doesn't support direct releases. We have a 1 second, NFS has a 2 second timeout on metadata. We have a 1 second timeout on metadata. We query metadata too much and we send too many frames. We don't send them all locked together. It's very interesting if you guys ever get bored and look at Mac traces and Windows traces and Linux traces of the same kind of thing. It's kind of fun, right? Look at, hey, you know, the Mac client, it does this preposterous number of operations, but at least it chains them together. So you see, it's kind of fun. You know, it's opening weird stuff and you're wondering why it's so chatty, but on the other hand, it's sending fewer frames than you might think because it's combining, you know, the open query close a lot more. But certainly SMB3 is faster than SIFS for large file IO, and in some cases faster than NFS. The POSIX emulation hasn't improved that much since last year, but we're going to talk about that because we've got two things going on. We've got the poor man's POSIX extensions, and we've got Jeremy's discussion. So we'll hold that discussion for a minute. So here's the list of dialects we can mount. 3.1.1 is partial support. The others are fine. So let's just very quickly talk about the year in review. The fallocate support, 3.19, is actually kind of interesting because fallocate's used by some virtualization code. Last fall, we worked through some options for finishing off the fallocate support for the fallocate in Linux has a lot of options. And I'm going to have a slide, I'll talk about that, but it's quite interesting to look at fallocate over SMB if you care about you know, the sort of virtualization-like things or you care about managing the file well, the holes in a file, sparse files. In Linux, all files are defaulted to sparse. It's a little different than Windows typically. Okay, so we fixed up map cares, we fixed up some Unicode stuff that was important in 4.1. In the 4.2 kernel, we added the sort of simple version of 3.1.1, the Windows 10 dialect. But I think one thing I want to talk about some more is duplicate extents. I'm very excited about duplicate extents the more I look at it. So I want to talk about that in a little more detail as we go. In 4.3, we have some more bug fixes. You know, it's really funny the kinds of things you run into. At our company, we use Macs. Strange, we do Linux on Macs, right? But, you know, everybody has their own idiosyncrasies. At some point, you know, I installed the new version that supports, you know, SMB3, and I couldn't get anything to connect to it. Why? Because timestamps differed. Okay. So setting the server and getting the client to sort of think it's using the server's timestamp on authentication, relatively minor fix, but, you know, if you upgrade your Mac, these little kind of annoying things are what drives you crazy as a client developer. When, you know, something changes in NetApp, something changes in the Mac. But when timestamp drift, that was a big issue for Macs. They were really strict about that, where Windows and Samba was not. We added KRB5 support. We had KRB5 support for a long time. We have we have some kind of neat callouts that were done a number of years ago for SIFS, but we didn't have it for SMB3. That was added for SMB3. Also, you know, one of the things that's very interesting is trying to figure out what properties the server file system has. A lot of times, backup applications or, you know, you really want detailed information about the server and the server file system. You understand the performance properties, what you can do. And it's not just for, let's say, duplicate extents, server-side copy. There are other reasons you may need this. You may want to know what type of media it is. You may want to know whether it's there's a seek penalty. So I added a detailed octal so you didn't have to go into proc, fs, sifs, dump a text file to get at this stuff. A little more structured way. Now, one of the things about copy offload, which is kind of interesting, is that one of the assumptions about copy offload in Linux generally was it's done on a mount, not a cross a mount. Well, obviously, if we're on the same server, copy offload works. So the copy chunk you could do across shares. So that was enabled in 4.4. We added new mount options for resilient and persistent handles and send the create context, the durable v2 create context. We don't send the channel sequence number, though, and we don't have the kind of failure. Some of this has been held up a little bit waiting for more of the witness protocol work, and I know we've talked about that a little bit in other talks. Matter of fact, the Vault conference a few weeks ago, we had some discussions about the status of the witness protocol implementation in Samba, but the client side of that is relatively non-controversial. The client side of that witness protocol is really exciting because it makes more sense. When we're talking about things like persistent handles and we can fail over to a different server, this gets a lot more interesting. At least for the Samba case, it gets a lot more interesting. So, and I think for the Windows case as well, right? When you're failing over, when you're moving a share from place to place or you're moving a server, being able to support the combination of persistent handles and the witness protocol is very powerful. We support the mount option. We don't support, right now, since the infrastructure is not there, going from this server to this server. And I have a slide. I'll talk about that a little bit. One of the curses we deal with in Linux a lot is hard mounts and soft mounts, there is no good answer, generally, for figuring out if a server is dead. They lie. The best we can do is try to ping it from time to time. But I think you guys saw the GPFS examples, right? You might have 5 minutes because you got the cluster rebalancing event taking and some operation may time out, right? Well, you can't have it time out just because a write's slow. So what you're looking at is, well, how do you tell the servers up? One thing we use is the echo command. So let's, wow, this is fun. Reminds me of the other room's presenter had the same problem. He threatened to end his talk then when his screen went to sleep. Okay, so the echo interval allows you to adapt how often we ping the server with this SMB echo to see if it's still alive for strange cases where network topology or your server is strange. Also, we began the encryption support. We haven't finished the encryption support, but the key pieces are in for that. 4.7, this is in progress. This is what we're working on right now. And I think somebody talked about bad lock yesterday. Well, as you might expect, bad lock hit everybody, including the SIFS client. It hit us because Samba changed, and with Samba changing, it meant that the way we do guest authentication, when we don't map to map guest to bad user. So depending on your SMB conf options, if you're using guest, you'll need a fix. It'll go into stable. It'll be upstream in a couple days. It's in the Fornix tree right now. But Samba guest options, depending on your SMB conf, whether you have mapped to guest or not, mapped to bad user or not, will break guest authentication because of these bad lock changes that were just introduced on the server side. The client side workaround for that is now in. There was also a NetApp DFS path name issue with double backslashes. We have to work around the NetApp issue there. We're also expecting the persistent handle channel sequence number thing to be done. Okay, so let's talk about the really exciting things. Everybody wants to copy a file, right? And all of you have Windows somewhere and have seen Windows somewhere and are getting used to the idea that you drag a file from one window to another, it's very quick. Well, I was playing around a little bit with this copy offload. And as you guys may know, Christoph Hellwig had driven into the Linux kernel broader support for copy offload, but under one condition. He wanted it a little cleaner architecturally. So we used to have a file system specific ioctl for BTRFS only, and later file systems like SIFS added the same ioctl. And basically what it did was it allowed you to clone a range. BTRFS is a copy-on-write file system, so it bumped a reference counter and the copy was almost instantaneous. NFS 4.2 added a similar sort of clone file range concept. SIFS had, or SMB3 sort of had that, sort of, with copy chunk. And then XFS and others were doing the same. So it was important to move that and broaden it. So we added a clone file range internal API. Well, what happens now is that private BTRFS ioctl that we relied on in SIFS doesn't get to us anymore. It's now intercepted by clone file range. That's good in a way, right? Because we now have a broad syscall that's not just used by one command, cp --reflink. So clone file range could be conceivably used by lots of apps. This is good. But it also means the old ioctl is intercepted. And architecturally, they put strict requirements on this. If you do clone file range, your file system must support something like copy on write. Now, the way Windows advertises this in REFS is with a block ref counting capability flag on the file system. And it introduced a new ioctl for this, a new FSCTL for this. So what you're seeing here is I'm creating a 30 meg file, and I had a 3 meg file on there. And we're seeing a mount to REFS. This is Windows Server 2016. So needless to say, this is not going to be the fastest you see. You know, this is just a silly little, you know, external drive, and this is, you know, this is just a local laptop with VMware, right? But so yesterday I recreated this. So now look at the time of this. If I do a regular copy of the 3 meg file, what, 68 milliseconds? That doesn't seem too bad. Now let's do a 30 meg file, regular copy. What are we seeing? You know, 8 or 9 times, not too bad. Half a second. Now, what happens if I do reflink? If I do reflink, it's calling duplicate extents. Okay? Now look at reflink. It's taking 18. What? 3 or 4 times faster, right? Pretty good. Now, but notice that going from 3 meg to 30 meg went from 18 to 20 milliseconds. That's not bad, right? 10 times bigger. Okay, so that's reflink. But what would have happened if you used copy chunk? Because copy chunk is kind of what we're used to, right? When you drag a file from one window to another, you're kind of used to copy chunk. So what would happen, you know, if you did that? You know, we see how duplicate extents is really efficient, right? Here's a trace that I did yesterday. And notice that, you know, cp --reflink, right? We open the file, we do an ioctl to set it to make sure it's not to make sure it's sparse, right? And then boom, one more ioctl, we're done. So 2 ioctls and the open and close. It's kind of neat. So what happens if we did the old style copy chunk? Because this, you know, by the way, this might be valid for Windows too, if you guys ever use Windows to Windows. I don't know if any of you guys ever use Windows to Windows, but there's a few billion people that do. So I was fascinated, like, when you look at copy chunk, so to get copy chunk, you have to use the cloner call, because cloner will call a SIF-specific ioctl. Cloner is one of the tools that you see in XFS, but it's also in the XFS test tree, so in the file system test bucket. But cloner is a simple thing that basically calls either the SIF-specific or the ButterFS-specific ioctl. So cloner is going to call copy chunk, which is similar to what you get if you're dragging a file from one window to another in Windows. Notice that creating the file took something on the order of 17 seconds, right? If you look at the amount of time it took to do a normal copy with none of this, it was about 20 seconds. So we're doing a copy across the network of a 500 meg file. It took about 20 seconds. It would be faster probably on your network, but you know, this is a slow laptop, right? But now, look at cloner. Cloner is going to do what Windows would do if you're dragging window to window. It went to half a second. That seems reasonable, right? But look at what happens if you try a second time to a file that is... the first one, I did it twice. I thought I had screwed up, and that's why I didn't time it. It's like, what was going on? When I retried it, it was half a second. Now, if I try a new file name, so that first line right above the first cloner call there, it takes about 18 seconds. It takes almost as long as the copy would take without copy chunk. So one of the problems is it's reserving space for that. And the reserving space takes a while. If the file's already big enough, if the target file's already big enough, it went 40 times faster. The target file didn't exist, it was only a little bit faster. Now, same file system, same target, same Windows 2016, notice what RefLink did. RefLink is calling the duplicate extents ioctl, the newer one, instead of copy chunk. 30 milliseconds instead of 18. So, we end up with an interesting, I should switch here, if I can do this, let me see if I can find it. During the last talk, I did some experiments. Here we have a same kind of thing. I'm trying to both NTFS and REFS. What's interesting to NTFS is that whether the file exists or not on the target makes a little bit of difference performance, not as much. In REFS, it made a huge difference in performance whether the target file was already big enough. So if you see here, cloner, this 200 meg file, doesn't exist, took a third of a second. Not as fast as duplicate extents would have been, but reasonable. On REFS, on the other hand, that would have taken, you know, 20 times longer, 30 times, 40 times longer. The second one would have been okay. On the other hand, NTFS didn't have the duplicate extents ioctl. So it's kind of interesting when you look at NTFS and REFS, each file system has a little bit different performance profile, but duplicate extents is a huge win from a performance perspective, and that's in. So this little diversion here was mainly to talk about realistically how much of a difference it can make for a user. If your server is REFS, you could support duplicate extents. This is fantastic. You know, you're consistently, over and over again, getting copies. You don't get that weird thing where one's 50 times slower than another, depending on whether the target file was big enough. Now, let's talk about the next feature, persistent resilient handles. Obviously important. We've had durable handle support for a while. Thank you to Pavel Shalovsky. And adding the second create context, adding these two new mount options. We do need to add the channel sequence number on reconnect. And we need to find some way to choose an alternate server and fail over to that. Part of the reason this is held off is we've been waiting for the witness protocol. And we did have discussions a few weeks ago about just forking off the client daemon. The server side of witness protocol in Samba has been waiting for maybe a year because we don't really have good async RPC infrastructure to block an RPC call forever, just waiting on a witness protocol notification. But on the client side, having a little daemon waiting on the witness protocol is less of an issue. On the other hand, we don't really want to be implementing a lot of RPC code in kernel. We'd rather rely on Samba tools for things like the witness protocol client daemon. But we also have a poor man's failover. Why not just, if the DFS referral had multiple servers, why don't we just use that? So there are cases we don't even need this, where we already know alternate servers to fail over to that we could use that would be relatively harmless. Okay, fallocate. This is interesting. Linux has made lots of changes to fallocate over the years. And you know the idea of fallocate. You can reserve space on a file. Obviously, virtualization uses this a lot. We've had fallocate support for a while. I had added support for punch hole. So you've got a file here. And I want to free up the middle of the file. I don't need those blocks anymore. Make it sparse, just free the middle of that file. Okay, we can do that. Keep the file size the same. Also, we have the concept of, well, I got this file. Now I want to just zero this range. Okay, we can do that. We can do that over the wire. It's not just XFS or EXT4 that can do this. And the idea of whether we keep the size or not. But we haven't had support for the two kind of weird cases. I got a file. It's got pictures of the whole Samba team, and somebody leaves the Samba team, and I want to get rid of that picture in the middle. Yeah. So, or you don't like that company and that vendor, you can take that vendor out of the middle. And I want to push the file back to a smaller size with that chunk in the middle taken out of it. Okay, so imagine that. I want to collapse the file by removing this range and smushing it together. You know, you see the video editing guys do this kind of thing, right? Well, with duplicate extents, we can do that, right? We can lock the file. We can move using duplicate extents these over here, as long as it doesn't overlap. As long as it doesn't overlap, we can do this, and you know, take advantage of the duplicate extents API to move it as long as it's aligned, and do collapse range very safely, very quickly. Similarly, insert range. Okay, I want to add that new Samba team member. Now, do we have our new Samba team member here? I don't know.
None of them are present at Samba XP, unfortunately.
That's terrible. They didn't want to see Gluster in a briefcase. They didn't want to see CTB in a briefcase. Oh, this is horrible. Offered them a free Raspberry Pi and they didn't come. No. But anyway, imagine we're going to insert the pictures of the new Samba team members in the middle of the file, and it's going to grow. Because it's alphabetical, right? We got to do this. Insert range. Once again, we could use duplicate extents for this purpose, moving in logical chunks with that, as long as they don't overlap the ranges. So that's a relatively easy change to make, but it would allow us to have the full support for FLocate, or at least close to the full support. Okay, so we focus a lot on the kernel. There's user space tools that are affected by changes. There are user space utilities that link in. In theory, you can do a SIFS mount without any of the user space tools if you specify the IP address and you're not using Kerberos and you're not mapping UIDs. But you know, the SIFS utils, it needs to grow. We need to add more SIFS utils. It's a little weird that the cloner is an XFS tool that we're using for SIFS copy. I don't know. It's weird. You know, you can see SIFS creds, ID map, the things to get and set ACLs. Hopefully with rich ACLs we won't need that as much. And the SIFS upcall. Okay, relatively small amount of work changes in that. Okay, so what's going on now? One of the things I'm actually most excited about, like literally this week, is XStat. I don't know if you've been following Dave Howell's work. XStat has been debated for years. It'll probably help Samba more than it helps the SIFS client. But you know, why is it that this is the year 2016 and we can't get creation time and some of the common attributes consistently across file systems? You know, birth time is in BSD, right? So why can't we get it from... So at the file system summit a few weeks ago, basically put the foot down, we're going to do XStat, but no bike shedding, no adding extra features. You know, it's going to have... One of the problems with XStat was that everybody added their own favorite feature, and it kept growing and growing, and then you'd have politics. What we're seeing now is XStat is going to have birth time, it's going to deal with the year 2037 problem, and it's going to have a certain set of attributes, period. Sounds good. Helps Samba. But one of the good things is it'll give a consistent way for people to get a birth time. We have this DOS attrib flag, and we have some ways to get at it with private SIFS pseudo X adders, but you know, we really need the system calls to get at these common things. And I think that XStat may be finally there. It'll, like I said, it'll help Samba more than me, because Samba will now have a consistent way of getting at things, which, you know, for GPFS you get it with one pseudo X adder. With different file systems you get it different ways. But I'm excited about that. It sounds minor at one level, but birth time, you know, comes up a lot. And some of these attributes, you know, you can do a set compress. You can change adder plus C and set a file compressed on a SIFS mount. But that's really an EXT234 utility. And, you know, you can't really view it using a standard utility. Well, this would allow you to view these attributes with standard utilities. Rich ACLs. Rich ACLs have been a big politics thing. Once again, at the kernel summit, there wasn't a lot of discussion about it because Andreas wasn't there. But I think, as you guys may have heard, yesterday or the day before, a new version of the rich ACL patch set was sent upstream. One of the reasons I like this is that it's cleaner than... SIFS has private interfaces to get at private SIFS-specific X-adders for this. NTFS and FAT expose their X-adders differently There's no standard code to get at these. Rich ACL will avoid that issue. And I don't know, people actually care about ACLs. They want to move a file from a NetApp server to an Isilon server to a Samba server. They care about ACLs. So rich ACLs is much more political, the next stat. But the SIFS integration shouldn't be too bad. So in the interest of backup again, people may not care a lot about alternate data streams, and some people have a violent hatred of alternate data streams for security reasons, but being able to list the alternate data streams for backup purposes is important. I have a patch, a patch for that. One of the problems we run into with SMB3, and love good suggestions on this, if you guys have ideas how to solve, is you can open an alternate data stream today, just put a colon in the file name, right? Open file colon stream. You know, you want to know what zone the Internet Explorer file came from? Well, you can open that alternate data stream. But when you have POSIX extensions, when you turn on POSIX name mangling by default, colon gets mapped. So you put in a colon, it's going to get converted to FOC 0 something or other. We use by default in SMB3 the same mapping that the Mac uses and the Windows Services for Mac uses. So POSIX reserved characters, things that are reserved in Windows but allowed in POSIX, like colon and backslash, get mapped to something else. So you can't open an alternate data stream without disabling those, the mappings, because of that colon conflict. So that's one of the problems, is that, you know, we got a lot of objection about creating an xadder, because there are some file systems that do this. I think Macs do this, right? They have an xadder that you can use to query streams. Well, that was kind of frowned upon. Okay, finish up persistent handle and encryption support. The guest login problem's in, and we talked a little bit about making DFS reconnect allow you to connect to multiple different server types. Okay, so what's the optional status? Security is mostly in. You know, we've got the signing, you know, the SMB2, SMB3 signing, downgrade attack protection, the negotiate contacts we send, but there's a piece of the validation of the SMB3.1.1 that's not in. The ACL support is for SIFS only, the pseudo xadder, partly waiting on the rich ACL patch set to see what happens in this next release on that, whether it's worth creating the SMB3 hook to get at, or whether just to use the rich ACL interface for that. Per-share encryption is about two-thirds done. KRB5 supports in there, the NTLM SSP support. We don't have support for claims-based ACLs. The durable handle support's there. Resilient handles and persistent handles, we send the right contacts. We don't send the channel sequence number. Multi-credit and large I.O., very good performance, very nice. We have the copy offload, this huge performance win with that. The multi-channel support has started. So for RDMA and multi-channel, we do query the information on the server, but now that we have Samba support for multi-channel, I think Michael gave a talk on that yesterday, this is going to make it much easier to finish up that last little piece of multi-channel, because we'll be able to test it a little easier on a single box. We don't have T10 copy offload. We don't have direct release support. That would be fairly doable, the direct release support, at least as a way of improving our current 1 second metadata timeout. Branch cache integration, haven't heard much request for that in the last year or two, but it's something I've been kind of fascinated about. And obviously we can get a lot of bang for the buck in compounding better. It's actually not that hard to do. We talked about the witness protocol integration. We do support get set compression. We do support sparse files. Okay, so what about POSIX stuff? We have three approaches to POSIX. You know, this is basically a quick summary on what works. You know, we don't support the whole range of Linux xadders. We don't support returning the POSIX mode bits, so we fail a lot of XFS tests because of those permission bits. Now, this could be handled as we do with SIFS by mapping this, by mapping the UIDs and mapping the mode bits from the ACL. And we don't support the case sensitivity. And we really need additional extensions with POSIX delete. So what are the things we could do? We have three approaches, and the bad thing is we have to do all three. So today we do the first, right? We try to enhance, take the existing SMB3 features and map them as best we can to POSIX. The big piece that's missing from that is, if you look at the Mac, for example, every single open seems to have query maximal access request create context. So they're getting back some of those mode bits from asking what access I have for this file as the owner of it. And we can query the ACL and get and emulate the permission bits from the ACL. If we see a case-sensitive volume, if servers didn't lie about case-sensitive volume, we could actually use case sensitivity when the server claimed it's case sensitive, but servers lie about this. We do support NFS symlinks, the Microsoft style reparse point for this. We may be able to improve that slightly. Also, there's a specific StatFS field we could get back if Samba supported the level 11 queryFS info. But you know, it doesn't address pipe range locking and the case sensitive path names. So what's the second approach? The poor man's POSIX extensions, as a recent email said, and that would be support the ACL create context. So you know, they have these server capabilities, you can see them here, and you know, here's an example of a Wireshark trace of ACL. You see the AAPL context there. There's a certain set of these features we can get from that. But here's another more detail, here's the response to the AAPL. I've highlighted the relatively small blob that comes back on the AAPL context. So what's the third approach? Well, wait an hour and go a couple hours and go see Jeremy's talk. And you know, this may be a little better. And this may be your chance also to dump any additional features into the extensions that you think Jeremy wouldn't scream at. I think it's a good idea. We've prototyped this. Richard Sharp and I and Jeremy have prototyped this before. And I think a lot of the difficulty with this has been just the amount of time we have available and little minor things like bad luck features taking 80% of everyone's time on the Samba team and other distractions. Okay, performance. We talked a little bit about SMB3 performance. 10 to 20% better than SIFS, in some cases 40% or more better than NFS, sometimes significantly more than NFS. But you know, NFS will continue to improve its performance. But I think it's important to realize large file I/O can look really good. That's an old slide, but I wanted to include it because you know, there are times people actually care about copying files. Okay, so what's the most important thing? In my mind, none of this matters. What matters is, does my app break? We have faster hardware, we have faster networks. What breaks? So we really need to improve our automated testing. Now, XFS test has made a lot of progress. One thing we did in the last year or so is we've added the ability to use a scratch device for SIFS and now NFS. So you can run a much broader set of the standard file system tests because we can, instead of having some physical device as your scratch device, you can specify a network file system mount. What that means is the set of test cases you can run are a lot larger. Well, and then the bad thing is some of them fail. So we do better with SIFS, especially to Samba, than this, but I did want to sort of give you a very quick overview of what I think really matters here. Surprising number of these things work. But look at that second line. A lot of tests fail because of permissions. How could we fix this? Pull the mode, pull the permissions out of the ACL. Why are we not doing the ACL? We've been holding off for 5 years thinking about will rich ACL come, will rich ACL come. So I'm really intrigued what's going to come out of this. You know, once again, email from Andreas yesterday or the day before to Alviro. Is this good enough? Is this all we need for rich ACL? Because if once we have these standard interfaces for ACL, it makes a lot more sense to be mapping these mode bits, mapping these things, getting the SMB3 support for ACLs fast, efficient, able to map. And notice the number of test cases. We're talking about like 20% or 10% of the, maybe more, maybe almost half the failures are due to permission-related stuff that we don't emulate as we hang on waiting for ACLs. Okay, F-allocate-rated things. A couple of these are actually bugs. And a couple of them are the holes in the F-allocate support that you need to support if you're going to run these F-allocate tests. Virtualization and some of these other guys care about this. But we talked about collapse range and insert range. Turns out, as far as I can tell, we're only missing like one or two that care about advisory locking, test 131, for example. Now, here's the hard ones. NFS fails some of these as well. We have multiple copies of the timestamps. We have our client copy and the server copy. And just like we have with some of the Microsoft functional tests in the past with Samba, it can be a pain to get the client and server to agree on what the M time is on a file. So that causes a couple test case failures. That may be okay. NFS has some of these same kind of problems. But what concerned me are, I want to make sure that these are so easy and so intuitive that somebody who doesn't know anything about SIFS or SMB3 or Samba can run this. They just work. Enough of them work so they don't get confused. The set of things you have to talk about in XFS test failures is a little bit too big here. We have wiki pages and all that, but it's a little too big. Okay. The work on the Linux client is very exciting. I don't want you to forget about SMB client. You know, some of the work Volker and others have done is fantastic on SMB client. There's things it does better. I think it's also very important to realize that NFS has its place. It, you know, flex files and the NFS 4.2 extensions are quite interesting. But in this world we have, where what we may need is to copy that file from your Mac to your Windows box, the Linux SIFS client is going to be around a long time. And you know, I would love additional ideas and patches, and you know, this is exciting time. We have some really cool features here. We talked about performance, we talked about some reliability things, we talked about some security things. We'd like to see more progress, and you know, I think this is a very interesting use case for Samba as well, because you know, it's kind of nice to be able to test on the same box you're running Samba on. Not that Windows is ever hard to set up, but I did fail setting up Windows just before this presentation because I was going to demo the TP5. It's just a lot easier when you're running on the same host. Okay, we might have time for a question or two, but I think it's lunch soon. So, you want to see if there's any questions?
Yeah,
definitely. Definitely have some time for questions left. So, anyone? By the way, I love seeing the logo at least once during the conference.
Yeah.
Just a remark about the timing of operations like copying files.
Yes.
You should always include the time of the sync afterwards. It might not be flush to disk yet.
Yes, that's true. It might not be. But at the same time, that's an interesting question. So should we include the time for sync after the copy? That's an interesting question because CP itself... CP itself does a close. And close internally, just before close, is going to call the equivalent of an fsync. So you'll get a flush implicitly before the close. On the other hand, whether it's honored by the server is another interesting question. That shouldn't affect reflink, so it shouldn't affect the duplicate extents, but it might alter some of the Windows timing a little bit. But in theory, you know, the close is doing the sync in theory. But it might cause more variability.
Well, Windows is right through.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, what we're seeing I thought was fascinating about this is, and one of the lessons to learn about all this is that you have two file systems on the same server, NTFS and REFS, with wildly different performance for copy chunk, depending on whether the file existed. And that affected RFS more than NTFS, and depending on what file system type.
Yeah, just quick, sort of like, once you actually get into clusters and you get into failover, then sort of all these questions of sync become relatively moot very quickly because you cannot have persistent handles without write through, so there is no syncing anymore.
And actually, his point about persistent handles is more interesting as well because I didn't do the mount option for persistent handles. When you're doing persistent, you're obviously getting a different create context. I want to repeat some of these tests with persistent handles on. Once again, I don't expect it to affect REFS as much as I expect it to affect the other cases.
I have a mic at the moment. You mentioned RDMA, but you sort of skipped over any plans to do any work there. You also didn't mention multi-channel. So RDMA and multi-channel status.
Right. Okay. So I did actually talk a little bit about it. But what I want to get on the multi-channel is multi-channel support in Samba appears to be more real than Michael might have admitted.
Ooh, even more real than he said it was ready.
Okay.
He said it was, you know.
At Vault, maybe he's more intimidated by the you know, all the file system developers. But you know, he kind of described it as a little more experimental than I would have. But you know, if multi-channel support is as solid as we think, it eases a lot of my tasks.
Well, I can tell you there's another server that it's extremely solid on, so feel free to...
Yeah. And actually, to be fair, I am running... I had some problems with TP5, but I'm running TP3 on this, and I mean, I think you saw the things I was doing there were against TP3. The TP3, I didn't actually configure multiple adapters, but that's trivial to change. You don't even need multiple adapters, right? You can just use a single adapter and connect to it twice.
Right, the client will do that. The client will connect anywhere from 2 to 4 times on a single adapter. Yeah.
I couldn't get the RSS flag forced on.
It doesn't require the RSS flag.
It'll do it even without the RSS flag?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have to think about some of the details of what it will exactly do, but...
Yeah,
anyway.
I mean, it's sort of a moot point anyway, because, you know, in my code, I can force it to ignore those flags. But what we have right now is we query the information always on mount. We don't do the 10-minute poll that I see Windows clients doing. So adapter changes, I'm not going to auto-detect. But every mount, I am updating that. The adapter information list. Windows is actually really interesting because it's not just the multi-channel support, it's how it optimizes it and decides when to use the channel, which is really cool. So one of the things that's really cool about Windows is that it doesn't use that second adapter till the copy's got a little bit far enough to realize, I could benefit from
that. The client SKU does that. The server SKU will do it immediately.
Oh, okay. But I mean, the client is really kind of neat because it decides, hey, this copy would probably benefit, so let me connect to the second adapter. Now that's what I'll probably do is...
Actually, what it's trying to do is the opposite. It's trying to say, I'm not going to go to all the overhead of creating another multi-channel connection just because the guy happened to pop open Explorer and it wants to show you the icon, that kind of thing, right? But in the server SKU, the assumption is he's reading the file because he wants to actually read this file. It's not just an accident.
Yeah, so your behavior is different on each of these clients.
Well, Steve, at one point there was a problem where the socket structure was basically kind of a one-to-one mapping with a client connection.
Yeah,
and
so
it required some re-architecture at that layer to introduce a new object.
So if you back up 10,000 feet, the SMB client has a very intuitive infrastructure. It has a set of connection structures that deal with the share, the export. Then what user is connected to that export? So we have potentially multiple exports connected to one user, multiple users connected to one socket. That socket structure now has to support multiple socket structures within one socket structure. And things like negotiate are kind of tricky because there's things that belong at a socket level, maybe what dialect you have, and there are things like this that are socket-specific information. That change itself is doable. The other change that's a little bit trickier that we need to explore and needs more than a few days work to dive into, the send-receive, right? So we don't know anything about the socket for 98% of the SIFS code, which is good. So that send-receive and deciding what socket something goes on for 98% of it is nicely layered, so you can hide that. But there are changes that have to be made because we don't want to send everything on that second socket. There are certain operations we want on that first socket always, I think. Is that true? Or does it completely random, you can send anything on anything?
That's the way Windows behaves. All connections are eligible. It does a sort of a queue depth balancing in an attempt to balance traffic on them, but it has no preferred connection.
I mean, if that's the case, then mount time we connect to both sockets, well, we query the information we have, connect to both sockets, and it's just round robin, just okay. One goes here, one goes here, one goes here, one goes here. Maybe it's that easy.
Round robin actually has its problems. Be careful with that one. It's subtle, but the simplest approach always wins in this. But every time we try to be clever, we break or get worse.
I mean, this is an area that is really interesting to dive into. There was a student a Canadian university that's been poking around a little bit on the T10 copy, and I may redirect him to play around with this, because this is a little more achievable for a student to attack, right? So getting, it's interesting to get somebody who has, you know, enough weeks available to dive in and experiment, but the task doesn't require too much brain surgery.
The T10 copy offload is used a lot by some of our virtualization. It's a sort of a SAN-like server feature that is pretty popular.
It is, and he did the, you know, setting up the Windows Server SKUs and experimenting with it, getting the traces of it, making sure he sort of understood it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are lots of little things that confuse people new to the protocol about this. So in any case, personally, I think that the multi-channel is more useful than the T10 for very obvious reasons. I hate being stuck with gigabit interfaces, one, but how many times do you have Wi-Fi and your wired interface, or how many times do you have multiple wired interfaces? And we sanely using this is hugely important. One thing I forgot to ask Michael, and I'm curious if you guys who went to the talk heard, is how far along is the SMB client sane usage of multi-channel? So,
which SMB client? Yours?
No, the SMB client, like the FTP-like tool.
Oh, the library. I don't think it's wired, multi-channel aware at all.
Okay. Because some of those sane, those decisions about when do I use multi-channel, hey, this is a Wi-Fi connection, this is slow, this is fast. One of the things you forget about is you get a lot of information back from the server how fast the connection is. Whether it's RSS, whether it's RDMA. There's some neat information you get back from the server. And, you know, there's nothing to stop you from having very complex algorithms.
I'm sorry, I have to go back here because we had one question. And then I'll call it quits because we have our lunch break coming up. And we're actually almost 15 minutes over already.
Hi. I was wondering when will duplicate extent be enabled by default on Windows 2016? Because I was trying to get the thing working for SMB3 in the kernel thing, and I couldn't actually get the server to reply to accept the packets.
So this is a question for the Microsoft guys, and
what
Brian.
Was your backend file system?
Sorry?
What was your backend file system?
REFS?
So back on TP3 or TP2, I think maybe Brian, one of you guys found a registry setting or something where it was disabled. Turned on.
It was turned off early in the very early previews, yeah. But I'm pretty sure it's totally on in TP5.
Yeah. I have TP5. It failed to install on mine because I think the download died 95% of the way through. But anybody who has a copy of TP5, we can try it very quickly. And I think it's extremely important for us to verify it with TP5, because as you say, we don't want to have to go through the little quick little change they had to do in TP2 or 3. There's a list of FSCTLs to enable or disable. You're not running TP5, I assume.
No, this was a few months back. I think it was TP3.
Yeah. Now, the demo I did was TP3, and it was REFS, but remember that there was that allow list or whatever that may have been tweaked by one of the Microsoft guys.
It should be open default if it's not.
And by the way, this is huge for Samba, so please, please, please. I've been emailing back and forth David Disseldorp about this, and he had the same comment you did, that when he has a SKU where it's turned on by default, he'll be much more excited about it.
Okay, I'm afraid I really have to call this discussion off right here. So thank you again, Steve.